Cunningham for another extraordinary message on Gill Athletics Connections.
All right, welcome back once again to the Gill Athletics Track and Field Connections podcast, the podcast that uplifts and honors coaches around the country. I am really so blessed and honored to be your guest, Mike. I was your guest back in December 25th. So if you haven't heard that one, go back there. But now I'm your host, Mike Cunningham, National Business Development Manager for Gill Athletics and Track and Field. So today, if you're a regular listener, you are become expectant. We just got off of an amazing Baylor 4x4 series, right? We had the head coach, Mike Ford. We had the legendary Baylor coach, Clyde Hart. You're used to amazing, awesome coaches from around the country and around the world. Well, we don't have that today, but we're going to find out some really interesting kind of, I don't want to call them behind the scenes, but things that are happening in track and field that you may not be aware of that I think you should be aware of. So help me welcome, as we learn about today's guest, help me welcome from 12th Rock Ministries up in New York, Mr. Greg Jelizinski. Greg, how did I do on the last name?
You did a wonderful job, Mike. Thanks, man.
You know, it's different saying it. And then getting it recorded. That's a whole different ball game. I'm glad I can just move forward calling you Greg for the rest of
time.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Good. Greg, thanks for being here today, man. You know, it's not lost on me that, you know, one of the most valuable things that you can ever give me is your time. So I do appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man with a lot of different, what do you call them? Irons in the fire, I think is the saying. So I'm excited to learn about this iron and this big fire of what we're doing there up in New York. So why don't we start with everybody's kind of seen the name. You know, normally it's, you know, Clyde Hart, Baylor University, right? So we've got Greg Jelizinski and 12th Rock Ministries. So the first question is always going to be, well, what is 12th Rock Ministries? Why don't we start there?
Absolutely. So 12th Rock Ministries, our mission statement, our vision statement is to change the atmosphere of sport, youth sports, by providing positive, life-lifting experiences to honor Jesus Christ. So the whole thing is we are trying to create a cultural experience for the families and the athletes that come into our programs that shows the love of Jesus. And we've seen this is our 24th year, and we've seen amazing relationships that develop through the avenue of sports. And it's just a blessing to be involved in families' lives through the sports experience from kindergarten all the way up to master's level athletes right now. So we're seeing a pretty cool impact on lives.
So one of the most natural questions that's going to come up then is, well, what is 12th Rock? What does that mean? We understand ministries. We probably could have assumed when I said 12th Rock Ministries, people were probably hopefully assuming, oh, sports to connect not just children, but people, but through sports to the life of Jesus Christ. What does 12th Rock mean then?
So it's our personal testimony. It's my brother and I. It's our personal testimony. We've been in business since I was 14. My brother and I have been in business together. He was 12. We had a little landscape business through high school. And then when we finished college, we started a landscape construction company, and we started this ministry at the same time. We were running our business and the ministry kind of side by side, and got to, I don't know, 10 years in. Both of us had three kids and mortgages, and God was telling us go full-time ministry. So as we're reading through scriptures and kind of praying through it, talking about what we wanted to name the organization, we were reading the story of Joshua and when he's taking the Israelites to the promised land, and they came to the Jordan River that was at flood stage. And there's a line in Joshua 3 and 4 that says Joshua commanded the high priest to put their foot in the river and watch what God does, basically. And that was us, man. We put our equipment on the side of the road, sold it. People thought we were nuts because we had a really good company and we were pretty well known in the Hudson Valley. And they said, what are you guys doing? You got kids, they got to go through college. And that was our faith step. And then it goes on in Joshua to explain that Joshua commanded the Israelites to grab 12 stones and place them on the opposite side of the river in the promised land. And those stones were to display God's faithfulness to future generations. So 12 stones, and we believe that Christ is that 12th stone. So we called it 12th Rock, and it's it allows us to have a name that's not super Christianese, and allows us to tell our story, because every event somebody asks us, what's the deal with 12 Rock? And that's the opening that God gives us to share our testimony. So it's pretty cool.
See,
so our goal is to make sure that future generations understand that God is faithful and that he shows up. And we've seen it countless times in our life.
See, when people think doing a podcast is hard, I just tell them, like, I just ask the obvious question. That's all I do. It's like, oh, 12th Rock. Yeah. Well, what's that mean? There you go. There's your podcasting host 101 instructions. Just ask the obvious question. Love that. Love that story. I love the cashing in all your chips, kind of poker lingo there of a successful landscaping business, kind of all you knew at that point. That was your job. You know, you'd been doing it since preteen, for crying out loud, all the way up to post-college, and then went into ministries. We're very similar people. I did that as a coach, Greg. I dropped all my coaching. I went in the SEC at Mississippi State, cashing all my chips. But instead of ministry, I went to Las Vegas and played poker for a living. I think yours is a little bit more noble.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a little, you're a little bit more like, oh, who had the better morals and things there. So what has 12th Rock, what have you and your brother done up to this point? We're going to talk about present and I'm gonna call it near future here in a second. But so as you got out of college, you dropped the landscape business, created the 12th Rock Ministries. How have you used sports and youth sports for this mission?
So we started off with a basketball program. That was our first thing. And the first year we were like 85 kids. And next year it was like 250. And the following year it was we got to a point where we were almost up to 500 kids participating in our basketball programs. And then we added flag football and soccer and a phenomenal archery program. So really we kind of followed the school calendar with families and provided programming that wasn't available for kindergarten through 12th grade students in our area. A lot of the rec programs do provide stuff, but we were providing another level of that type programming. And then in the summer times, we'd run camps, like evening camps and stuff like that. So that's kind of where we cut our teeth, and that's where we got our reach into the community was through basketball programming. And then everything just continues to build on that. So pandemic kind of shut us down though, basketball wise, because we couldn't get into facilities. So we're in rebuild mode right now for basketball, but our archery program is vibrant, and we've done camps from Maryland all the way up to Maine. We travel in the summertime and kind of mobilize our ministry and work with different Christian camps and stuff running their sports programming. So.
And where are you? Someone's asking the question right now. I can just hear them screaming at their podcast app on their phone. Where are you? Where is it? You mentioned camps from Maryland to Maine. That doesn't really give us kind of a pinpoint. Where kind of are you centrally located?
So we are in an amazing location because we are 1 hour north of New York City. We're in Orange County, New York. So 35, 40 minutes from West Point. Where our property is, we are half hour from Pennsylvania border, an hour from Connecticut, and we're 3 hours from Boston. So we're pretty centrally located in New York, right. and basically the Northeast. I mean, we're accessible from all regions, so it's pretty nice.
And you mentioned starting with basketball and moved to other sports, and you have a really viable archery program. How do you... You mentioned kind of going along with the school year calendar, but there's a lot of sports that overlap. You have to make choices. How are you choosing where you're going to do basketball? How do you fill out? You mentioned getting up to 500 kids. If you have five kids versus 500, that's amazing. You're still affecting young people's lives positively, but 500 requires assistant coaches, helpers. I mean, just so much more. How are you have you built that infrastructure?
We rely so heavily on volunteers. Like in our prime, when we're running that 500 kid program, we're 200 volunteers strong. And so I usually oversee the basketball programming. My brother oversees the archery programming, and we have a different set of volunteers for each of our programs. So we're running basketball as we're running archery, and it's a different set of kids that's being reached. You know, there's not every kid's a ball sport kid, and the archery program is really reaching into the special needs community as well. So we have quite a few kids that are on the autism spectrum that are shooting in our archery program right now. So we cater our volunteers to what their specialties are. And we just really pour into and train our volunteers well.
How long has this been going on now? What year are we in?
Well, 12 Rock has been around for 12 years, but we've been doing sports ministry for 24 years.
Yeah. Do you think, I'm kind of putting you in the spot here. I feel like I'm putting you in the spot more of like, you have a lot of examples and I'm going to ask you to pare it down to one or two versus normally I put someone in the spot and they got to think of one. Can you think of over 12 to 24 years, especially using sports and, you know, our listenership, our audience here, they themselves have typically been positively affected by coaches and by sports. Certainly maybe have had children, their own children that have been positively impacted by coaches and sport. Can you think of a story, an example of one of the young men or women, young children that has come through your ministry that was changed, whether they, you know, had no self-confidence in themselves before they came in and learned how to play the sport of basketball. Maybe they went on to be a basketball coach. Can you think of just an example of what 12th Rock has helped a young person come through?
You got to ask me to whittle it down.
That's what I say. I think I'm putting you in a spot to like, okay, I can't have 50 examples here, Greg.
So I think that I have a couple that really just like shoot to mind. One is a young man. So I'll start with a basketball player. He came into our programs. His dad's a local pastor. This kid is one of the most gifted athletes I've ever coached. My youngest graduated high school. That was the last time I coached. Like, I kind of walked into the sunset with him. So he was the same age as my youngest son. So they did AAU together and stuff. But this kid is the most gifted basketball player I've ever coached. And I texted him during his college career just to say, hey, I'm showing up to your game. Because he played on two, they went to the Final Four 2 years in a row with his junior college team.
Wow.
And then I texted him. I said, hey, I'm coming to your game, because he had transferred schools. And he just, the text message was amazing. He just said, coach, I don't know if you realize how much of an impact you've had on my life. And I'm in the place I'm in because of you, because you believed in me in fourth grade. Now it's awesome. It's not hard to believe that this kid's a good athlete, but he's just an amazing young man. And then it turned out that he ended up having a heart condition, so he couldn't play this year. And the way he handled that as a young man, and he just, I ran into his dad around Christmas, and he's just like, the way you've spoken to my son's life over all these years. And I was just treating him like he was my own kid. So Tim's story, amazing. The other one, it was just unbelievable, blew my brother and I away, was a young man that actually came to us last winter asking to raise support for his new ministry. And he's like, can I come to your office? And he's sharing this story. He was telling us of a time, we're going back 16 years ago, I think it was. Yeah, I think it was 16 years ago. He did a basketball camp, and we shared the gospel at the basketball camp. And he accepted Christ like 3 weeks later, and he's from a Jewish family. So then he started ministering to his parents, got them to come to church, and now he's got a ministry ministering to the Jewish community, and he was seeking support. And we were like, out of a basketball camp.
Right.
So like, God does stuff like that all the time, and it's just cool. And we have countless stories about our archery program where kids just felt welcome, felt like family, felt safe. So that's the type of stuff he's doing. And we're just excited to be a part of it.
You know, Greg, you reminded me of kind of two things there. One on that second story, you know, I think as coaches, we sometimes think our job is to help a kid dribble the basketball better, or, you know, specifically here on our track sites, to make them faster, jump farther, throw farther, et cetera. You know, that's this part. If you're not on YouTube watching us, it's so small. Your positive impact on young people is the job. 99, yeah. You've heard me. If you're a regular listener, you've heard me say this 100,000 times now. 99% of your kids aren't going to college. And if you're in the college side, 99% of your kids aren't going pro, but they're all going on to be moms, dads, business owners, clergy, accountants, et cetera, doctors, all these great things. The impact you make on them is the impact you make on society. You're making better people. So I love that story there about the second one. The first one, I actually couldn't help, but as you were talking about that young man saying thank you, and I could see it in your eyes. You didn't say this, but you said it in your eyes, Greg. You were, I could hear you saying internally, I don't need the thanks. I know I impacted his life. That's what I'm here on earth to do. That's awesome. But it definitely made you feel good when he said thank you, right? So it made me think about, I know we don't have much of an audience of today, of current athletes, but I know we have a huge part of our audience that is former athletes. I challenge you, and maybe I'm even challenging you, Greg, think about that coach, track coach, basketball, it doesn't matter, archery coach, maybe it's a teacher that impacted your life and you haven't said thank you in a while. That person right now is not sitting around waiting, man, I wish Greg would tell me thank you. You know, I really went to bat for him. But when you call that person or email or text, by the way, the mode of communication doesn't matter to me. I'm not big on this, well, they texted, they didn't call, or handwritten note versus email. This is really where the thought that counts comes through. It is humbling yourself, going to someone who made an impact on you and just making sure they know, hey, boy, thank you. I don't know that I'd be where I am today without your belief or your trust or your pushing or whatnot. That first story just kind of really resonated with me of like, oh, man, I'm kind of talking to myself here a little bit too, Greg. I think I have a few people I need to make sure they know the positive impact they made.
Yeah, because the very reason I'm even doing what I'm doing is because of my two college coaches saying we were doing all kinds of stuff in the community camps. I'm like, man, I got to keep doing this stuff. And I did have the opportunity to thank my basketball coach this past fall. Our team got inducted into our college's Hall of Fame, and he was there. Wow. With our whole team. And I just got a chance to thank him and share with him because, I mean, I met my wife through that. And so it's just, coaches have such an impact on kids. And now we have kids now that have played in our program that are now coaching like local high school teams and stuff. And nice. It's cool. Like they're calling us for advice. And it's just, it's really cool.
One of the greatest, I just had this image, picture I've seen on social media. I think it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think, and John Wooden. He went to UCLA, right? Not a basketball guy, so I'm not sure. And it showed a picture of him when he was an athlete, and Coach Wooden had his arm around him, probably telling him about a play to do or whatever, yada, yada. And then fast forward, and it's Coach Wooden is, you know, clearly Kareem's in the NBA, probably past even Kareem's NBA time. And it just showed, like, you know, Coach Wooden loved him then as an 18-year-old, loves him now as a 50-year-old. Like, you know, the impact of a coach is not the time on the track or the court, it's lifelong if you're doing it correctly, which most of us and most of you are, which is awesome. So where are you, when I say where, not necessarily, you know, the city, and, you know, we talked about kind of where you're located, but to do basketball camps, even archery camps, etc., you got to have a building, land, something like that. What are you doing now, and what do you got planned here in the maybe near future?
So for the last 24 years, we've been renting school buildings, everyone we can get our hands on for the basketball programming. That became a challenge during the pandemic. That's why our programming kind of slowed down. And we purchased a piece of land going on 7 years ago now, and with the vision to build an indoor sports complex on it. So we've been developing the land and using it at the same time. So we run our archery programs spring, summer, and fall on that piece of land. We have 14 acres. Beautiful field space to work in. And then in the wintertime, we use an indoor facility for that. And then we rent local tracks and stuff like that when we need to. But we can do most of our programming on site. And then we also are partnered with an ag tourism farm. They're friends of ours for like 20 plus years. We built a cross-country course there. So we host major cross-country races out there and use that venue as well.
Now, when we're in the world of track and field, which that's my own box, right? I'm always, it's very little outside of track and field for other sports and such. It's typically that it's a track person who is running track camps, running cross country, making a cross country course, et cetera. But I'm not really hearing much of a track background. What's your background in sports and track and field?
So my dream as a kid was to play baseball professionally. Okay. And then I fell in love with basketball and I was like, I'm playing college basketball. So that's what I did. I was blessed and got recruited to play and then ended up playing baseball too. I had zero track and field background. And the reason we started going after track facility is because it's a huge need in the Hudson Valley, like regionally. The closest ones are down in New York City, Staten Island. And then you got to go up, you know, Syracuse way. So there's nothing anywhere close to us. So being business guys, you have to diversify. And I, in all true honesty, I did the AAU basketball circuit, and it's exhausting. And facilities are nice, but you can't throw all your eggs in a basketball basket. So you have to be diversified. So when we started doing feasibility studies, we were like, "Well, track." And we started talking to the high schools and the local colleges, and they're like, "If somebody gets a track facility built in this area, it won't be big enough. It won't. There won't be enough time in it." And that's what we're finding. So we kind of fell into track and field first with the facility, and then pandemic hit, and we were like, "How do we put food on our table? How do we stay in front of athletes during the pandemic?" So we figured out how to do stuff outside, and that's when we built the outdoor throws facility, and we built a cross-country course. We actually had two cross-country courses during the pandemic, and we stayed open. We were the only guys open on the East Coast, so people were coming in from all over the country to throw at our place and to run in our track, in our cross-country races.
So there's a real lesson here, because in the track world, we tend to be very, I'm not sure if I'm using the word right, myopic. We tend to be very small-sighted in that we need to get more track fans to meet, more track people, more track this. Here, you're not a track guy by any means. What, and you're talking about you ran feasibility studies, you're kind of maybe making the pitch that track is valuable to a lot of people, not just someone who is a former runner or now a coach.
Yeah. So what we're finding is it's about the experience for the family, the athletes, and that's kind of the goal of the facility, is that we want to make sure that everybody that comes to the facility, everybody that comes to an event, is taken care of. So that's kind of been our approach with the cross-country stuff and the track field stuff. And then we surround ourselves with quality people. So I'm like, I don't know anything about this. So we're blessed. Dan Mecca, that was former Manhattan College, is our throws coach, and he's made amazing connections for us, and he's very well known in the track and field world. And then we've got a great relationship with USATF track and field officials. So we hire the best officials, and we make sure that they are that they're quality officials. And then we try to do the small things, so we just take care of the little things. And what we've found is that you're talking about the, if you're looking at sports and trying to have the greatest impact, what sport has the most athletes tend to vet? A track team. So for us, we're trying to impact lives. I'm looking at numbers. A basketball team is 12 to 15 players. A track team is 80 to 125 kids every team. So greater impact, right? And even when you talk about the throws, the care that we're taking with the throws athletes, it's incomparable to what they've seen at, unless they go to national level meets, right? So we're trying to take care of that on an old farm field, and they're loving it. So we stretched people a little bit, because they're like, "We don't do this like this in track and field." I'm like, "Well, I see it functioning like this, and it works, and it meets all the safety regulations of what we have to do during the pandemic. So this is how we're doing it." And I mean, our meets were packed, and it was phenomenal.
So talk to us about that. You started with the distance, you know, with the cross country courses and then throws. Now distance seems like the least expensive, right? But you have to have land, you have to build cross country. So it's not on the equipment side. Certainly it's the least expensive for us, right?
Yeah,
we don't do anything for cross country, unfortunately. Yeah. Right. But then you go to the track side, and there's a lot of different events. You can still talk about distance runners, sprinters, hurdlers, throwers, jumpers. And you went straight for maybe the one of the more expensive options, not just throws, but hammer throw. I mean, you know, hammer cages, no, you know, there's no dollar store hammer cage out there.
Nope.
Talk to us about why did you start there? And then somebody had to have helped you. No offense. I just don't see a baseball, basketball guy going, "Oh, hammer cages. This is easy. Let's just figure out a hammer cage." Like, how did that come about?
No offense taken, but we have a construction background.
Sure. Yeah, good point.
So that has been hugely advantageous to us. Yeah. And Dan, Coach Mecca is like, he understands what the circle needs to be, the surface.
Sure.
So we got the first circle right, and he said, "Just keep making them like this." And so the concrete contractor we work with, he's nailed it every single time when we have to move the cage around our site. But our first hammer cage was actually made out of trees that we cut down. And it brought like the throwers back, especially our masters level guys. They're like, man, this brings us back to like the old days where we would just find a field and throw in it. But the hammer is so attractive because nobody, like schools don't allow you to throw hammer. Like Jersey, we get a ton of people from New Jersey, Connecticut. I mean, all the way down from the DC area. Like we can't find a place to throw the hammer. And for us, it's a construction site. So yeah, go ahead and put holes in the ground because we'll clean it up. And but it's, I mean, Mike, during the pandemic, we had 7 people qualify for Olympic trials at the facility. And out of a cage that, you know, we've made it safe, and it's not like what we have coming this spring with the gill cage that we're getting, but we've made it work. And I think the athletes, I know the athletes and the spectators have appreciated the fact that we're making it work for the throwers. Because we've heard a lot of them were like kind of the redheaded stepchild of the track and field industry. And we're like, we're rolling out the red carpet for them, and they're loving it. And it's been super enjoyable.
This feels very, if you build it, they will come type of philosophy.
Totally is. Yeah. Yeah. Cause now we're a World Athletics certified facility. So like last summer we had pros throwing there, which was pretty cool. And this new cage is going to just take us to the next level as far as that goes.
When I came out last time, you have something kind of unique out in the sector that we have to be cautious of. Talk to us about that kind of.
We're
literally talking about a field here, guys. We're not. Yeah, we're going to get into the facility here in a second, but we're just in the field.
So we've actually shifted where we're going to put the hammer cage. So that silo is going to be the focal point. Like it's going to be dead center at the end of the hammer sector.
Okay.
So when you're throwing the hammer, you'll be throwing right. Nobody's going to hit the silo. If they do, then we should have TV crews there. Cause
you just made a big challenge to a lot of people, by the way. Yeah. Oh, we're not going to hit it. All right. We'll figure it out.
Yuri Sedek's record goes down. That's how far. So,
hey, notice that this is a non-track guy throwing out record holders. That's awesome. Yeah, I love it.
Well, we were fortunate. We had Yuri Sedek actually came and did clinics for us before he passed away. He did 3 clinics for us before he passed away. Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, so yeah, we know the numbers. We know we're starting to learn the lingo.
Yeah, sure. I love it. So we talked about hammer. We got some cross country courses. So what's the facility look like? You must have this Taj Mahal facility out there then.
Nothing yet. Right now it's all gravel. So we've broken because we are a nonprofit and we're still raising funds. We're trying not to put our families in significant debt. We are. We broke the project into phases, and we're in the middle of phase 3 right now, which is basically leveling the footprint of the entire piece of land, putting in all of our parking lots, putting a bunch of infrastructure in so that we can keep using the space. And as we continue to raise money, but the end game is about a 2-acre facility under roof. It's got a 200 meter track, 8 sprint lanes, 1200 seats for the track facility. Separate areas for throwing and the jumps. And then on the other side of the facility is a basketball, volleyball facility. So 4 collegiate basketball courts, which turn into 8 volleyball courts. And then the whole center court of building is, you know, cafe and locker rooms and everything infrastructure you need to run a quality sports facility.
So I don't know that there's any small indoor facility. It's indoor, so it's not an outdoor facility, but it's still, because of the walls and the roof, there's always a lot of infrastructure that goes along with it. But what you just described is not, I'm kind of in my head visualized as you're describing it. This doesn't seem like some small shack that's going up that's going to have a 200 meter track in it.
No, and it's when we were going through the feasibility study, like with our pro forma company, they're like, you guys have too much you have too much space design in here. We can tighten the space up. And for us, it's about the fan experience. It's about the spectator experience. I've been in those facilities where they squeeze a track in or they squeeze a basketball court in, and it's a miserable experience for the fans and the athletes. So our whole goal is to develop a facility that's excellent for everybody. We want people to come back. We want people to enjoy the sport, whether they're a kindergartner dribbling a basketball or whether they're a collegiate level athlete running the track. We want them to have that amazing experience every time they come, because it keeps people coming back, you know? And that's what we've been able to do with the stuff we have now. people keep coming back because of the experience they have.
How do you, Greg, this just kind of popped into my head as I'm thinking about this amazing facility that you're working on and the amazing things that you guys have already done up to this point. You know, this started with, I think you said, you know, five kids playing basketball, basically, right? And, you know, obviously you worked up big numbers and really kind of patchworked that those big numbers together, meaning renting all these different gyms and things like that. Now you're going to have this facility. And I want to talk a little bit more about the facility here in a second. How do you and your brother and really everyone that you involve and allow to be involved, volunteers, et cetera, how do you keep the focus, number one, being how do we use sport to help kids understand about God's love? There's a lot of other things that are going to be pulling for your, there's a lot of other things pulling your attention today, building the facility for crying out loud, but there's going to be upkeep, scheduling, maintenance, everybody in your ear telling you how to do your job better, by the way, when you run a athletic facility.
Yeah.
How do you keep the main thing, the main thing?
That's a wonderful question. Every time we meet with our volunteers, every time we meet with our staff, it's all about pointing them back to mission and vision. Our prayer every day is, Lord, if we're not supposed to build this place, then you redirect us and shut us down. But he just keeps opening the door. And in the end, we don't want it to go, look what Greg and Mark built. It's look what God built. And look what he accomplished through two guys that just have, you know, the faith to just step out and keep moving, you know. We're going to kind of switch gears. We're not going to try to be the guys that run a facility and run all the programming. Because it's a massive need. Indoor space in the Hudson Valley is a massive need. So for us, our ministry is going to kind of shift gears to like making sure that when you walk through the doors, everything is taken care of. You just worry about your program. And we've seen that so influential in just dealing with, like, we just hosted the MAC conference cross country championships this past fall. And the committee was working with them. They were like, you guys have this taken care of and this thing. Like, we take care of everything. And they just walk in the door and run the race. And they're already coming back next year. So that's the goal, is like, that's our form of ministry, is like, God calls us to excellence in everything. So, hey, you don't have to worry about anything. Everything will be taken care of. And that gives us an opportunity to minister to the families, the coaches, the team, the places that are renting our facility, the organizations that are renting the facility. And then that we're not spreading ourselves so thin either. Because I've been in facilities where they're like, well, we can make money on this program. We can make money on this program. And then it becomes about like paying the mortgage, paying the lights. And for us, it's when it gets to that point, it's time to shut it down, because then we've lost focus.
Yeah, that's why I talk about the different priorities tugging at you, because you still do have to pay the mortgage. It can't be, this is all about paying the mortgage, but you still have to pay that while also making sure, how do you help little 8-year-old Timmy and Tina be able to come to that facility and understand what the mission and vision is? Yeah. What kind of, you mentioned you've had athletes in the facility from, in the program from extremely young all the way through masters. What's the vision for the facility in regards to specifically track and field? That's our audience here. I know you mentioned basketball, volleyball as well, but for track and field, is this going to be, you mentioned the need in the Hudson Valley. Is this going to be a facility that runs a ton of middle school, high school, younger athlete meets? Is this going to be a NCAA championship type facility that, you know, hosting NCAA championships? What's the vision for the track portion of the building?
So for the track portion, we would love to see after school running programs and stuff like that, track and field programs. We have a huge call in our area. People are looking to get their kids involved in track and field early. And so we're seeing that in our camps and our clinics and stuff like that. We've got a tentative agreement with the locals, like the organization that oversees all of the high school competitions. They're excited about it because they're saying it's going to bring like the lower class schools the ability to have track programs, because the cost to transport down to New York City is just insurmountable for these. So like, we'll see class D and class C and D schools popping up track and field programs because it's locally accessible. And then the small colleges that don't have track facilities have already started talking to us. So we'll probably see some, you know, small college conference meets and stuff like that. We we won't have the spectator capacity to host the huge like NCAA regionals and stuff like that, but MAC championships, those things, we'll have the capacity to do so. So it can go, and we have amazing conversations going with the USATF Masters level as well. Like, we should win the bid to host the outdoor championships in 2024 or 25. So we have those conversations going too. So what's cool about it is when we have our meets, we have middle school and high school kids competing with open and master's level, like all together. So they're interacting all day, and it's an amazing and unique experience all in one.
I like how well thought out that was, Greg, because, you know, typically when I work with facilities, specifically indoor facilities like this one here, when I ask that question about what's the vision of the facility, the meets and things like that, a lot of times they will say, oh, we want to host the World Indoor Championships. And I have to quickly remind them, well, first of all, it's only been done once in the United States, twice. I think Indy did it once, but Portland with Vinlandana in Oregon a few years ago. I was like, so first of all, it doesn't happen in the U.S., first of all.
Exactly.
Second of all, you know, that's not going to be the majority of your people. Like on a average Tuesday, the international team from South Korea is not going to be here practicing, you know. So you got to know your audience. And I think a lot of people sometimes, because it's track and field, and so we're very gold medal focused and Olympics focused, we automatically tend to think of World Indoors for an indoor facility and Olympic trials for outdoor facilities. But you really, if you're going to build a facility like this, have to know who is the audience. Who are you actually serving? Who is going to be there Wednesday at 8 a.m.? Who's going to be there Thursday at 8 p.m.? Not who's going to be there Friday through Saturday during the Olympic trial. You know, you got to know who your audience is. So I like how you've actually thought about that. And it ties very succinctly into the mission and vision of 12th Rock as well.
Yep, it does.
I've yet to hear 12th Rock talk about, our mission is to get Olympic gold medalists to profess their faith so that we can affect young people. It's like, oh, no, we want to bring young people into our ministry and show them what we're about. So that's really interesting. I like that. So what's the time frame? Someone right now is like, hey, man, I want to come to Hudson Valley right now and start throwing start running and jumping in meets. How are things going?
I wish I knew the timetable. God knows the timetable.
That's right.
We were just talking about that this morning. I mean, in our humanness, we would love to be open in 2025, but we are at the point where it's a funding piece. That's where we're at. We have all of our approvals in place. All of our environmental studies are done. All of our feasibility studies are done. Because we phased the project, it's great because we just moved the bond from piece to piece. So as we complete each phase, then we just move our bonds. So it's been good because people can see progress. So what they can get involved in right now is our outdoor throws facility is phenomenal. We have 8 meets on the schedule for this year. And then we have 4 or 5 major cross-country races on the schedule already for this year. So those are things that they can immediately get involved in. But the funding piece is where we're at for the indoor facility.
This might be the only discussion I've ever had where cross-country and hammer throwing are the main two components.
I know, right?
It's like, yeah, we got cross-country going over here. We got hammer meets over here. It's just normal track, right?
Yeah.
Love that. Well, we'll make sure we have it down in the notes too, but where, if someone is listening to you, hearing this story, hearing the, maybe they want to know more about 12th Rock as well, maybe like an about page, things like that. What's the best place for someone to go to learn more about the ministries and maybe push a donate button?
You can just go right to our main webpage, 12throck.org. Yep. And then if they click on the sports complex tab, they can see everything about the vision for it.
So we'll have that in the show notes as well, but pretty easy to remember 12th Rock. And I believe, if I remember right, it's not spelt out. It's 1-2. TH. Yeah. So 12th Rock, 1-2 TH rock.org. And I really, if any of this interests you, whether it's the location being up in Northeast, where it's the sports complex that has basketball, volleyball, track, and more, whether it's the ministry, maybe it's Hudson Valley, I don't know, maybe it's your former basketball person that has a kid running track now and this interests you, I really implore you to go check out 12throck.org and check out the when he talks about the sports complex page. There's some really cool renderings, and even more so, you know, renderings get some people excited. Real pictures get me excited, and there's some really cool pictures of what they've actually done and have going on there right now. And then if you're led so to help donate and bring this to fruition pretty early. Greg, to start wrapping up here, you know, I'm always interested in legacy, right? When you're talking about someone like Jesus, that, like, to me, that's legacy. It's like, you know, I can imagine, you know, someone interviewing Jesus Christ as a 30-year-old, like, hey, you know, what do you want your legacy to look like? And, you know, yeah. You know, it's like, well, the Bible, start there, right?
That's
It's the world's best podcast or biography that there is, right? For you, and please know I'm not comparing Greg to Jesus here. For anybody, I just thought about this. What a connection I just made. I'm not making the connection. I'm just
not even close.
That was my setup. Terrible setup there. Greg, when you look back and you think about the facility that you're building, when you think about the ministry that you have built and also continue to build, when you think about 10, 15 years from now, what do you want that legacy to be? What do you want people to say about Greg, 12th Rock, the facility 10, 15 years from now?
I love that question. For me, it's less about the facility and more about who these young men and women have become. And number one, for me, I want to know, it's just like when my wife and I talk about our boys, it's like we are so proud of everything they've accomplished, but more proud of the fact that they follow Jesus. So we want to know that kids understand who Christ is and that they can have a relationship with them, with him, and that they're going to impact their families and their community someday. So my prayer is that kids like Tim Linton and the Jason Amodios, like all these kids that I've coached, that are now coaching, are impacting their community in a positive way and that are pouring into their families and their wives and just being good husbands, being good wives, being good contributors to society. And if they got a little glimpse of that while they were part of 12th Rock, then praise God. I hope that that's what people think of us and not the facility and not the, you know, experience that they had, but more so like, man, these guys cared about us and they wanted me to be better. So
remember, you're rarely coaching up future Olympians.
Exactly.
Some of you listening are, certainly. I know there are. But the vast, vast majority of your responsibility, just like you said there, Greg, you're raising future husbands, wives, uncles, aunts, business owners, clergy, accountants, etc. That is a vast, vast, huge responsibility that you have out there as a track and field coach. And I know the vast majority of you are doing an amazing job. And I think sometimes we just need to reflect on that, take a step back from that PR, clicking that stopwatch, taking that tape measure, and realize when you're looking at the kids in front of you, how they look up to you and the impact that you make on them. Greg, thank you for that. Anything we missed? Anything else we need to know? Can we go real quick for, I'm going to interrupt that question for another question. I know there's a hammer thrower listening right now going, whoa, you do competitions? Because we're always trying to find hammer competitions. Can we find that on 12throck.org as well?
Go under programs, throws meets. Yep.
Okay.
Everything's there. And we're also listed on Direct Athletics.
Okay.
Perfect. Yeah, everything's on there.
See, someone probably saw that and was like, yeah, what is 12th? I never even heard of 12th right now. They know a little bit more. That's awesome. I'm glad we were able to do this. So what do we miss? What else do we want to say to wrap up? Anything we missed? Anything you want to announce? Anything you want to make sure people, obviously we want people to go to 12throck.org. What else do we need to wrap us up here today?
You issued a challenge earlier to the coaches. Mine is just stay in tune with what's going on in your kids' lives, because they open up to you more than they will to their parents. I've seen it so many times over and over again. And if you see that the athlete's just a little bit off that day, dig in a little bit, take the time to dig in, and they will thank you for it in the long run. Because it's a huge part of being a coach, is just being aware of what's going on. And, you know, I coach basketball, lacrosse, and soccer, and you can tell, like, man, this kid's off today, and just take the time to figure out what's going on, because it could be as simple as you making a connection for them to just get them some help, because kids are going through some garbage right now. And just take the time to take your eyes off the sport for a second and worry about the kid that's there, because they're young and influential at this age.
Bingo, nailed it. I could regurgitate that and say it in a different way, but you nailed it there, Greg. That's exactly right. Hey, thanks everybody for being here. You know, we continue to work on not only bringing you great, amazing coaches from around the world, but we want you to see people like Greg and his brother, and then countless other volunteers and helpers and donators as well, by the way. You know, I'm putting Greg and his brother on the spotlight here, but he represents hundreds, thousands of people that are making this, have made it possible and are making it possible. So I like to bring you people from behind the scenes. You know, we had our CEO here, Gil, on the podcast. I like for you to see that there, it's not just coaches that, you know, to help you do your job. There has to be other support systems. And what I really like, the real main reason I wanted Greg on the show here, was we have to look beyond track and track people. We need to find the Joes, Jimmys, Gregs out there that have a passion for what we do as track coaches. So the kids and the sport, and bring them into our sport and have them help build us a better sport, a better infrastructure for our coaches and our athletes. So that's why I truly love you, Greg. I love track people, but I love you more because you're not a track person. So just so thankful that you've seen, seen the light of our sport. I'm glad that you didn't shy away from it, because it can be an intimidating sport from the outside. And we are definitely a better sport today than we were yesterday with you in it. And we're going to continue to grow with what you're doing there at 12th Rock Ministry. So thank you so much for joining us today, man. I really do appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks again for you guys being here, man. Check us out next week. We're going to do it all over again. Probably have a coach next week, and we'll see how things are going. Go 12th Rock, 12th Rock. Yeah, I almost said ministries, 12throck.org. I'm not kidding when I say even a dollar helps. That's the crazy part about this. This is a mass consumption thing that we need here. I'm sure Greg will be very happy if you want to donate 500,000 more, for sure. But a dollar helps a future kid one day get in there and run that 60-meter dash in that facility. A $1 donation right now helps the hammer throw competitions to bring people in to help further the mission. So just implore you to go to 12throck.org. And if you're led to, please hit that donate button. So, guys, thanks again for being here today. We'll see you next week. Have an awesome week.
The goals to appreciate the coach, the ones who point people most. Every season needs a voice of reason, speaking the growth. Got a prep for you, carry the load. It's coffee to the soul for those of us who stay on the go. Proper handoff to stay in the zone. What you packing for the road? There's more than one way to the goal. Take notes, that's paying your toll. It ain't practice if your purpose ain't clear. It can't happen till you listen with both ears. You can't mentor without a mentor's years of experience. You can reinvent those years. Every plan's got a standard to live up to. And the price, sacrifice, can you give up you? It's a choice and a fight. Not a win or lose. It's not a ploy, but advice so y'all can make more moves. It's not about how to, it's all about why. You don't know till you know who you are inside. 6 million ways to tie, choose none. So we all cross the finish line, the work ain't done. So we learn from the experts. We all gotta put in the legwork. Gil Athletics is a network. It's all about connections, put together for the profession. So every track coach could be a blessing.